Right, just to waste the day.
Yes, that's
without right. Torah, that wasn't
that was never his.
So it's good that we're able to do at least Chetzio al Hashem.
Yes.
So we're on Daf Kuf Yud Beis Amud Aleph. And we'll probably want to close the door. And we had the Mishnah about stolen property, if you recall.
Right.
And the Mishnah says that if someone consumes stolen property, but he wasn't the gazlan himself, then he doesn't have to reimburse the nigzal because he didn't do the gzela. Again, if the object is still intact, and that's hashavas habe'en. So the Torah says, "Veishivas agzela shar gazal." However, in the case where the object has been consumed, let's say, for example, in foodstuff, then the chiyuv becomes a chiyuv tashlumei damim, and that's singular. That's unique to the gazlan. It doesn't apply to anyone else. So that's what the Gemara is going to quote here, a brisa, which is Tanur Rabbanan. If you count up from the bottom of the page, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 lines. And right before that, it says Tanur Rabbanan. Veheshiv esagzela asher gazal. And of course, this is a pasuk in the Torah that addresses the issue of number one, returning the object that was stolen in Sefer Vayikra, and also its value if the object is destroyed or lost. And the Bryson wants to know, why did the Torah have to add the two words Asher Gazal? They seem to be superfluous. If it was Veheshiv Esagzela, then obviously Gzela means Asher Gazal. Asher Gazal. What is the Matam Lomer Asher Gazal? What's coming to teach us? And the answer is Yachzir Ke'en Shegazal, that he should return the object as long as it is in the state it was in when it was stolen. Asher Ke'en Shegazal. But if, on the other hand, the object is destroyed and it doesn't exist anymore, then you cannot apply the principle of Ke'en Shegazal. So the Gemara says that that's not enough. But rather, Mikan, we can go even further. Mikan Omru, based on this statement and this principle, Agozel Umachel Es Bonov, if a person takes stolen food and he feeds it to his children and they consume it, and therefore there's no longer Asher Kain Shegazal, is Peturim Yilashalem, they don't have to pay. In other words, the Chiv Tashlumei Domim, as we said, is not imposed on anyone but the Gazlan, not his children. Hiniach Lifneim, but if the object is still intact, so the Gazal, the Chavetz HaGazal is there, is then Bein Gadolim, Bein Ktanim, Chayovim. Okay, this is the opinion of the Chachamim against Sumchus, as we'll soon see, that you don't have to be Tovea, a person who's a gadol bebezdin, in order to get back your object that's rightfully yours. Even if the person who's holding on to your object is a katan, you still have recourse to get the object back. In other words, regardless of the chiyuv hashava, whether it can be imposed on the children or cannot be imposed on the children, the chachamim insist that in this case, since the Chafetz HaGazal still exists, it's Be'en, the Nigzal has rights to get it back. Comes along Sumchus Amru, Mishum Sumchus Amru, Gidolim Chayovim, Ktanim, Pturim. That you cannot be Tovea a Katan into Bezdin, and you cannot bring Edim to testify against the Katan. So at this point, the entire case is put into deep freeze. And we have no way, and the Nigzal has no recourse to get back his Chefetz HaGazal. So before we read the story that the Gemara is about to tell, let's just think and ponder for a moment, what is the Yesod here that they're arguing about, the Chachamim and Sumchus? It would seem to me that what's at stake here is the following. what generates a tvi'a? What generates a tvi'a, a chal shem tvi'a, is a counter taina on the part of the nitba. So if Reuven is suing Shimon, and Shimon is denying that obligation to pay, then we have to go to Beis Din and work out, you know, the proofs on both sides, weigh the evidence in favor of Reuven the Tovea, and the counter evidence in favor of the of Shimon the Nitba. And in such a case, we have a problem of katan. That if a katan is not capable of being a nitba, because he can't anticipate that he would come up with a counter argument, then you can't sue him into Beis Din. The lawsuit and the tvi'a is contingent on the possibility that there be a taina of the nitba, a counter argument. Here, in the case of a katan, he's not even capable of any sort of counter argument, and therefore Simchus says ktanim pturim. The sheet of the Chacham is a big chiddush. They want to suggest that you don't need a tvi'a when you're just getting back that which is yours. You know, if I want to be tovei you and say, well, you borrowed money and you want to counter argue, you paid back, that's one thing. But if my chafetz was stolen by Ploni, so I have a din Torah with Ploni as accusing him of a gazlan, and the evidence is clear that he did steal my object, I have rights to get back the object. The fact that the Yorishim are now holding on to the object, that's secondary. That has nothing to do with this din udvarim. And what this really means is that the halach that I cannot be tovea katan applies in the following condition. When the katan, as the nitba, has what's called muhzakus, I want to be motzi something from his chazaka, his possession. And that I can't do because he's a katan. I have to wait until he becomes a gadol. Then I can sue him and get it out of his possession. But the Chachamim insists that in this case, the katan doesn't have any possession. He's holding on to something that doesn't belong to him. And nobody denies that. So just because he inherited from his father a stolen object, therefore we can't be Toveim and Beis Din. Toveim and Beis Din means what? Because he's a muksak? He's not a muksak. In what sense is he a muksak? Yerusha cannot create muksakas on a cheftzad niksa. And maybe in that sense, Sumchus is being machadish, that no, there is such a thing as muksakus by virtue of Yerusha, even on a cheftzad niksa. And the reason for that would normally be because maybe it was paid up, but here you can't say it was paid up. But maybe, who knows, maybe there are two objects that are very similar. One was stolen and the other was not. And there's a question, you know, if we blur the identity of, as to whether or not this is that object.
I mean, how does the cotton know that it's stolen?
There are eidim that testify on behalf of the nigzal that the father of this child was a gazlan on this very object.
It doesn't mean anything to the katan.
Of course it doesn't mean anything to the katan, but the katan can't claim muhzakus. Right. You know, even if he had a possibility of putting forth a claim, muhzakus he can't claim. The fact that he was yorish, a stolen object, that doesn't make him a muhzakus. He has no bona fide, legitimate muhzakus. Comes along the chachamim, and they say, therefore, I don't have to be toveim in Beis Din. The whole point that a katan is beyond the law as far as suing him with a litigation of a plaintiff is because that plaintiff is putting his muhzakus, meaning the nitba, the katan's muhzakus, into question. Maybe the katan has muhzakus. And maybe if the katan was a gadol, he would come up with all sorts of arguments that would protect his interests and counter the arguments of the plaintiff. But in this case, where we already have clear-cut evidence against the gazla, just the poor gazla nebuch is gone, then the katan, in this case, has no muhzakus. He's holding on to something that he inherited that's really he didn't inherit. It was never part of the Yerusha to begin with. It belonged to the nigzal. In that case, the chacham say the fact that he's a katan is irrelevant. It's almost as if the katan is viewed here from the Chachamim's perspective as a deposit box. a safe box. The Nigzal wants to get back his Gzela. The Gzela is being held as a pikadon beyond the Katan. The Katan is holding it on behalf of the Nigzal. He's not holding it on behalf of himself. Again, he doesn't know the difference, but that's irrelevant. Al Pidin, he's not in Muxon. And in that context, Sumchus becomes a little bit more problematic, because Sumchus says, no, like, we have to wait till the Katan is a god. Which might indicate that according to Sumchus, with Yerusha, there's a brand new halacha that the Yoresh becomes a Muxach on all the Nechassim. Even if it's crystal clear that some of the Nechassim don't belong to him, but that's only because we're going to take it out of the hands of the Katan. But the Katan does really have a Tfisa. Now again, if we were talking about Metaltalin, I would certainly understand the sheet of Sumchus. And maybe if we're talking about foodstuff, then by definition we're talking about Metaltalin. Sumchus says that the Katan, insofar as he's a Yorish, he has a Tfisa. Right? There's Aloch Kol Masha Tachas Yodolim Shalom. You want to remove it from his tefisa, you need to take him into Bezdin for that. Like, for example, Ovid Inishdina Lenafshi, the Gemara Bava Kama, does that apply here? One argument would be, well, the Katan is holding on to a Chefetz HaNigzal. I don't need his Rishus to go into his backyard and take it away. It's mine. I have rights to get it. I have access to it. I want to get it. The other svar is to say, no, I can't take the law into my hands just because I know it's mine. And everybody else and their uncle know it's mine. He's a toe-face. And if he's a toe-face within the context of the Yerusha, I have to take him into Bezdin in order to get it out of his tefisa.
So there's no argument you can make that it says, first of all, it says that he's, whether he has chayim or shalim or not shalim. It doesn't say anything about a shame that returning the gzela intact. All it says is about shalim. Maybe it is the more prime to make a deal with him. Anybody that doesn't have a chiyuv, never had a chiyuv of Heshivas Agzela, doesn't have a chiyuv of Yerushalayim.
According to Sumchus, you mean.
Right.
So Sumchus is saying, how can you impose upon him a chiyuv Yerushalayim? He was never included in that Heshivas Agzela. It didn't apply to him. You see, but again, we always come back to this point that I drill in to myself and hopefully to you, that the Heshivas Agzela really has two dimensions to it.
Yeah.
One is the dimension of a mitzvah, and you know, the Gazlan has to do tshuva, and it's a lot of anithik le'asei. The Heshivas Agzela shel Gazal. There might be another chiyuv hashova that has nothing to do with the mitzvah, but has to do with chiyuv mamon insofar as I'm holding on to someone else's mamon. An afkamina would be someone other than the Gazlan, in this case the Yarshim. The Ketanim are Yarshim, and now they have a Chiv Veshiv Sagzel. Again, I can't impose upon them a Chiv on a mitzvah because a Katan is part of it on mitzvahs, but I can impose upon them a Chiv Mammon to return the Mammon that belongs to someone else. Right, let's see if we can make a little progress, okay? And then, because the Gemara tells the following story. Bar Chamua de Rabbi Yirmiya. There's always going to be a story with an Edom and a Shver, you know, with a son-in-law and a father. Okay. Now, in this case, we're talking about Rabbi Yirmiya's father-in-law. Okay, right now, we don't know his name, but he has a son. Okay. And this son is a Katan. And this is going to be a fascinating case because Rav Yirmiya wanted to take possession of that which is rightfully his. But this little child, I guess he wasn't so small, he was big enough to tarak. Tarak means to close Galay, the door, Biape de Rav Yirmiya, in the face of Rav Yirmiya. Basically, he blocked Rav Yirmiya from coming into the house of his father, who was Rav Yirmiya's father-in-law, to claim that which was his. In other words, we may have the mistaken impression that when a son inherits his father, everything in his father's possession belongs to him, and nothing belongs to his brother-in-law, or the son-in-law, if you will, of the deceased. But in this case, Rabbi Yirmiyah is the son-in-law of the deceased, and he wants to get back that which is his. Let's say, for example, he deposited an object of value in the hands of his father-in-law. Or let's say his father-in-law gave him a gift, and he, Rabbi Yirmiyah, the son-in-law, wants to pick it up and take it for himself. Comes along this little schnook, you know, this little chutzpahdik, and he says, wait a minute, I'm the Yoresh, and I inherited this. You have no right to come into the house and take it away. So what he does is he seals off the house and blocks any entry into the house on the part of Rabbi Yirmiyah. And basically he's saying this katan. Now I'm not saying that it has any significance in halacha, but the essence of what he's doing is, look, Rabbi Yirmiyah, with all due respect, I inherited my father. And if I inherited my father, I'm a muchzak. You want to prove that it's yours? Go take me to Bezdin. But you can't take a cotton to Bezdin. That's the catch-22. Also, l'kami d'Rabbi Ovin. So this case eventually came in front of Rabbi Ovin, and Rabbi Yirmiyah was hoping that Rabbi Ovin would issue some sort of an injunction. What's the word?
Yeah, that's it.
An injunction against the katan to allow Rabbi Yirmiyah to break down the door if need be and get access to his possessions. But he was disappointed. Omar, because Rav Ovin said to him, Shalohu Tovea. He's claiming that which is his, meaning he inherited the house and anything inside the house. And therefore he has a right to claim that it's his. And if he claims that it's his, you have to prove that he's not telling the truth. And it really belongs to you and not to him. Now, you might immediately ask the question, well, Rabbi Yirmiyah is claiming that this object belongs to him. How could Rav Ovin tell him that Shalohu Tovei, that the object belongs to the Katan? It really doesn't belong to the Katan. And the only thing that I can come up with here is Yerusha. That Yerusha gives a person rights automatically with the death of his Morish to ownership of the entire estate. And now Rav Ovin turns to Rabbi Yirmiyah and he says, well, you want to get an injunction from me? I'm not going to issue such an injunction. Amalei, so Rabbi Yirmiyah says to him, V'amaisinon sahadi dachziki bebechai avua. I have testimony to the effect that this belongs to me. The house is mine. Why? Because I have a chazakah. And that chazakah, interesting how the Gemara has to emphasize that chazakah was established during the lifetime of my father-in-law. And the reason why that has to be emphasized here is because we're talking about Cheskes Gimel Shanim, which is conditioned on the fact that a person uses the land the way it's normally used during a period of minimum 3 years. And that's going to give him the ability to claim ownership on something because he has a chazakah. Meaning the owner must have sold it to him. Again, you have to add the stipulation that the 3 years of chazakah took place during the Chaya Av, because the whole chazakah is predicated on the Raya of Shtika. Why didn't you make a protest? But that doesn't make sense in the case of Yarshin. You know, you can't expect the Ketanim to know that this particular piece of property belonged to their father and they have to make a machal because somebody's squatting on the karka. That they have no access to that information. But if the chazakah was achieved during the lifetime of the father, which means that for 3 years consecutively during the father's lifetime, Rabbi Yirmiyah was using this house, then he has a chazakah and he has two edim to prove it, and therefore his claim to ownership is an absolute claim. And therefore, what do you mean when you say to me, Rabbi Yovin, that Shalohu Tovea? He's not being Tovea Shalohu, it's Shali, it's mine. Now again, all these problems might have been solved if Rabbi Yirmiyah had a shtar, and if that shtar testified that his father-in-law gave him the house, then no one could contest his ownership, Rabbi Yirmiyah's ownership. But his own, but that's not what Yirmi was saying. Does it say a word here about a shtar? Doesn't say anything about a shtar. It says something about witnesses who can testify in his behalf that he used the land and he made a chazaka for 3 years consecutively. So he doesn't have really an absolute chazaka. Well, if part of those years were during the lifetime of the child after the death of the father, but if the 3 years from beginning to end took place during the lifetime of the father, then he, Rabbi Yirmiyahu, has a full-fledged chazaka. And that's exactly what the Gemara is saying. Ha-maisinan sahadi, this is what Rabbi Yirmiyahu is arguing, the achzakei bei b'chayavua, b'chayavua, Ramosai, during the lifetime of his father-in-law. So again, the whole debate here is, who's the mochzak? Rabbi Oven is assuming that the child is the mochzak, because he inherits his father's house. And there's no question, nobody can contest that the father owned the house. That's for sure. Comes along Rabbi Yirmi, he says, wait a minute, that's not true. I can prove that I own the house. It's my house. Because I lived there for 3 years consecutively and I have Aiden to prove it. You're beginning to sense why this Gemara, with the story of Rabbi Yirmiyahu, is insolent? Is there such a word?
Insolent
little brother-in-law. In general, you should know I like brothers-in-law, but in this case, I can just see what this kid is like. You know, he's just locking up Rabbi Yirmiyahu and not allowing him any access to the house. It really boils down to the question of who's the muchzak. On the one hand, the child is the muchzak because he inherited the land and the building from his father. On the other hand, Rabbi Yirmiyahu is the muchzak because that land was he had a chazaka established for 3 years on the land. And this sounds awfully similar to the case of a Chafetz HaNigzal, where the Yorshim immediately acquired some sort of possession over this object from their father. But on the other hand, there's proof that this object was stolen. So what kind of knapper muchzak are you? Amalei, Rav Ovin says the following, and here we're about to turn to Kuf Yud Beis Amud Beis. Can we accept testimony? You're saying that you have testimony on Cheskas Gimel Shonim, but you can only bring in testimony to testify in the presence of the Baldin, the Nitva, who stands to lose from this Edus. Shalob Ifnei Baldin? Is there such a thing as accepting witnesses and validating their testimony if there's no nitva? Now, truth be told, that I'm not sure if that is absolute. There may be situations in which we can accept the edus of two edim without the Baal Din, if there's no other way out. You know, if there's no possibility for getting hold of the Baal Din.
Like he's dead.
Maybe he's dead. Maybe there is Kabbalah Seitz. But right now, the Gemara seems to apply this principle in an absolute way. So now you, Rabbi Yirmiyahu, claim you have Edim to testify on 3 years of Chazaka. Where are these Edim? Did they testify during the Chaya of? No. You want to testify now? Who are they testifying against? Who's your other Baal Din Kshekenegdo? It's the Ketanim. You can't. That's exactly equivalent to Shalom Bifnei Baal Din. There's no Baal Din here. A Ketan is not a Baal Din. So Rabbi Yirmiyahu is still an Ibra Chacham, right? And he's going to argue against Rabbi Yavin. It's back and forth. The low, and I'm going to try to prove to you that your premise is not correct, and there is such a thing as testimony against a Katan. For Katani, we have a Brisa, Ben Gdol and Ben Katan Chayavin. So now Rabbi Yirmiyahu invokes the sheet of the Chachamim. Here's where the secret gets revealed. The cat is out of the bag, because the Chachamim say that in the case of a Katan, the principle of Ein Me'idin Shelo B'fnei Bal Din doesn't apply. The katan is holding on to something that doesn't belong to him. We got to get the katan out of there. And we don't have to wait till he becomes a gadol to do so. Let the Bailim come and claim that which is theirs. And if it was a nigzal and the stolen property in the hands of the Yorshim, then let the nigzal come and just confiscate the chefetz on nigzal. If that be the case, says Rabbi Yirmi, in the light of the Shittas Chachamim, I, Rabbi Yirmi, have the right to get rid of this child, take over my house that I've been living in for the last 3 years. I have a chazakah. And when a person is taking that which is theirs, they are muzakim. And that applies, according to the Chachamim, their rights to take it away even from a katan. Because the whole problem with the katan, the name Me'idim b'fnei katan, is because the katan has a chazakah. But in this case, the katan is not the muzak. It's the gadol who's muzak.
How did they get rid of the
chazakah
of the
katan? Oh, how did Chachamim suspend the chazakah or neutralize the chazakah of the katan? And the answer is that Yerusha only applies to that which belongs to the father, the Morish. It's not an issue of tfisa, but rather an issue of marakama. The katanim would have a chazakah b'toris marakama.
Right.
Which means stepping into the shoes of their father. But that doesn't make any sense if the father wouldn't have had a chazakah. The father wouldn't have had a chazakah because we know that the chazakah vis-a-vis this karka was in the hands of Rabbi Yirmi the Machzor.
Yeah, but he only can prove that if he brings Aiden, and he can't bring Aiden because when there's no Baal Din. So he hasn't proven anything so far.
I hear. Let's see how Rabbi Yirmi defends himself. Omele Sarav Ovin says to Mari Machlokes Sumchus Bitsidcha. Now at this point it sounds like Rav Ovin has paskin like Sumchus against the Chachamim. And this is an exception to the rule, but there are cases as far as few and far between as oh, we paskin like Sumchus against the Chachamim. This is one of those exceptions to the rule. And Sumcha says that you cannot the Nigzal cannot confiscate his property from the Bnei Yorshe Haganov, even though they are Ktanim, or shall I say, because they are Ktanim. And we view the Katan as the Muchzok. And we pass them like Sumchus. So Rav Yirmi says, Omar, Ichpal. Kuli alma v'koy besumchus lafkuon l'didi. Now, again, there's a phrase here that's more of an idiomatic phrase. Ichpal. Ichpal means they put in a lot of work here. Everybody's ganging together to put a lot of work here to prove that the halacha is like sumchus in order to take my possession, undermine my possession on this karka. That's not fair. So it comes out that, as we'll soon see, the Gemara is going to introduce Rabbi Avo into the picture. Until now we've been talking about Rabbi Ovin, and Rabbi Yirmi is fighting tooth and nail against Rabbi Ovin. And Rabbi Ovin apparently is stumped at this point. He doesn't know what to say to Rabbi Yirmi. Maybe he's right. So the Gemara tells the following story. Adahachi igalgil milsa. This is what's called Gilgul Neshamis. I'm just joking. Igalgil milsa v'asa umata l'kamei de Rabbi Avo. In other words, even though there was a whole long discussion, a dialogue between Rabbi Ovin and Rabbi Yirmi, at some point, like that dialogue was frozen, and Rabbi Ovin knew that he was right, but he didn't know how to counter against Rabbi Yirmi. And the case is galgel, you know, it circulated
like the circuit court,
right? Until finally, it came in front of Rabbi Avo. Now, I get the impression that Rabbi Avo was the expert. And what happens? Omar. So Rabbi Yavo said the following. Lo shmilchu. Did you not hear? No, well, why are you waiting for me to cast the deciding ballot? Ha'adir Rabbi Yosef bar Chama Rav Oshia. Diomar Rav Yosef bar Chama Omar Rav Oshia. Tinok shetokaf be'avodav. V'yorad l'soch sodesh shel chaver v'yomer shel lihu. What happens? The katan tells his avodim to go into someone else's field and claim that it belongs to me. So you would say that you can't if the avodim of the child do that bidding and they enter into someone else's field and they take possession over it, that there's no way you can get that out of the hands of the katan until he becomes a gadol. So let's say, for example, the katan is 9 years old. Then for the next 4 years, the karka, the sod, is going to produce fruits for this katan. And why? Because he illegally usurped the karka. Okay. So basically, what Rav Yosef bar Chama in the name of Rav Moshe is saying is that you can't just, you know, it's not a hefkevelt. You can't just allow the child, insofar as he's a child, you know, guy's wearing a pin on his lapel, that's on his the label says, I am a katan, meaning I have special rights as a katan. I can confiscate any property on the face of the earth and you can't do me anything. Could you imagine? If the katan has enough avadim, he can take over the whole world. No. Says Rabbi Avo, that's not so. And how do I know it? From Rabbi Yosef bar Chama, in the name of Rav Oshia. And what's the case? The case is where a child sent his slaves, v'yared l'sok sadeh shel chaver v'shalihu. Is what's the din, says Rabbi Yosef, Ein omrim namtin ad sheyagdil. We don't have to wait until he becomes a gadol. So we'll explain that in just a minute. Ela motzian miyad miyado miyad. Let's just see if we can.
This is very strange.
Yeah.
I mean, this case is unrelated to the other case. This is when the Kohen did it himself. And this is not the
Yerusha
of his father.
Well, again, even in the case of Yerusha, keep in mind that Rav Yirmiyahu was a machzik. He was going in and out of the land. You know, every morning he would leave the land and go to his local synagogue to daven. And then at some point in the afternoon, after a day of learning or working, whatever it was, he would come back. And in that interim, between 9 in the morning and 5 in the evening, the katan locked him out. This little, again, I don't know what word to use to describe him. I'm not a big fan of his. He's a real chutzpin yachtis child, probably very sharp. And now the child is claiming, you can't sue me in Beis Din until I become a gadol.
Yeah, because, exactly, and he's got, it may be a kanunya, but he's got the law on his side because we're passing lech sumchus.
Oh, so that's what we're trying to figure out. And Rav Yosef seems to say no. That should we say that just because this tinok was takaf, yared l'tok sadeh shaveir shaliyu, is therefore we're going to have to wait until he becomes a gadol? Because he decided to take the law in his hands and he employs these slaves and he takes over possession. He says, I'm a katan. Ich bin a katan. And he's very proud of the fact that his status is that of a katan. Because that gives him immunity, and therefore, if he's immune, he can take possession and become a muksok. But again, Eilu Dover Sof, he can literally take over the whole world. Says Rav Yosef, that we can't accept. This is unacceptable. Ein omrim namtin ad sheyagdil ela motzian miyado miyad. We immediately confiscate this sada from the hands of the child, of the avodim of the child. Ulekshayagdil yavi edim. And now he's saying the exact opposite of what he said before. Let the child become a bar mitzvah, and now he can bring witnesses and claim ownership on the Sada. But until that happens, we should award the Sada to what we believe is its rightful owner, because the owner has chazaka, and the cotton, just because he confiscated it, that doesn't give him chazaka. So this becomes, Rabosai, a proof for Rav Yirmiya. And why is that? Because Rav Yirmiya said that when his brother-in-law, this little pishinka, comes and locks him out of the house, he's illegally establishing a chazak. He can't do that. And it should be exactly like the case of a katan who sent his avodim to take possession of somebody else's sada, and Rav Yosef Bar Chama Paskin that he has no right to do so. And he thinks he's an Iber Chacham and he's going to postpone the inevitable until he becomes a gadol. No. Rav Yirmiya says we're not going to do that. We're going to say Motzi Enoso Miyado V'yovi Einim L'Sheyagdil. The headache is now, the responsibility is now in the hands of this Katan, that when he becomes a gadol, he'll adduce evidence to get back this karka. But in the meantime, well, what rights does the Katan have to establish a chazak and seize possession of someone else's karka?
Where's the Yerusha involved in here? Was he Yerusha? He was never Yerusha.
Oh. So let's see. Me dummy. Is there really a valid analogy between Rav Oshia, who is based on, Rav Yosef, who's based on Rav Yoshia, and Rav Yirmiya? L'chora yesh l'chalek. He says the following: Hasam hu demafkina mine dolo kaimale achazoka diavua. There, in the case of Rav Oshia, let's take the katan out of the field because he doesn't have a chazaka. Why? Because his whole chazaka would be an inherited chazaka from his father, and his father himself didn't have a chazaka. And why is that? Because we know that it was stolen goods. You can't establish a chazaka on stolen goods. Aval hecha de isle chazaka de avua. Just 1 second. Did I get this right? Aval hecha de ika chazaka de avua. Lo. Then we cannot take the karka out of his hands.
Motzi, where they said talking about where the kid ran in and just hopped the property. What he had the
with his avodin?
Yeah.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Yeah.
But let's see if we can find Rashi here. 1 second. All right. I don't see that Rashi comments here. Just 1 second. Let's see. Tosus, Dibra Maschil, Aval. Let's see, maybe that'll help.
Oh, no, here it is right here. It is. It's awesome. It's the third line. Awesome.
Oh, okay. Hosam, who di yared letoch, stecha vero, de lesle lach tino bach soda chazoka de avua. Aval hecha de isle lahai tino bebayit ze chazoka de avua. So Rashi says the exact opposite of what I said. Okay. So Rashi says that, you know, it's a question of how do you learn hacha and hasam, or hecha and hasam. And Rashi's learning that hasam is kaimile chazaka davu. In the case of Rav Yoshia, this little brother-in-law has a chazaka, whereas if the child just sends his avodim to take possession of land, that's not called a valid chazaka. But you see clearly that the whole sugya revolves around this question of whether or not the child is a muksak. And Rashi says that when it says hasam mafkina mine, It's a reference to the case of Rav Yosef in the name of Rav Yoshia, of Rav Oshia. Rav Oshia, not Rav Yirmiyah. And there, Mafkinamine. And why was Rav Oshia so keen on getting rid of the cotton, on taking him out of this chazaka? Because Lesley Laich Tinok Bach saw the chazaka. He has no chazaka. He didn't inherit it from his father.
Yeah, he was just
yours. Right. But in a case where inheritance from father, that inheritance, like in the case of Yirmiyah, establishes mukzakus on the part of the child. Tosa says, Mashba, dahainu afilu hoya Rav Yirmiyah v'toch habayis, even if Rav Yirmiyah was actually sitting in the house at the time, and the child evicted him, it doesn't matter. You cannot be tovea this child until he becomes a gadol. And why is that? So Tulsa says, why didn't the Gemara make the following distinction? That Hasam balasada muksak besada hacha Rabbi Yirmiya lo ayu muksak mashma delo toli bahach imidi ela bamed de islei chazak me avos afilu hoyi Rabbi Yirmiya muksak bebay. So he says, if the difference would have boiled down to whether or not Rabbi Yirmiya was in the house and he got evicted by the child, the Gemara should have said that, and that would have answered that question. But from the fact that Gemara omitted that, it means that even if Yirmiya was in fact living in the house and this child, his brother-in-law, evicted him from the house, nevertheless the child would still have a chazaka by virtue of the fact that he is a yorish. Masha Enkein, in the second case of Rav Oshia, not Rav Yirmiya's case, but Rav Oshia's case, there, the child does not have a chazak because he's not an heir, he's not a yorish that's inheriting any character from his father. He's just trying to establish a tfisa on the character by sending his avodim there and taking possession. That's not a valid chazak. So it's fascinating. I think if we go back to the original discussion about Rav Yirmiya and Rabbi Ovin back and forth, Rabbi Ovin reflects the final maskana of the sugya based on Rav Oshia, but Rav Yirmiya, from his perspective, held that the katan has no chazak. And the way we wanted to explain it is because when it's stolen goods, then even his father was not muchzak on it. You know, lo tehei haben gadol mi'aviv, you can't say that his chazak and the ben's chazak would exceed that of the father. I don't even know if the father was muksak.
That's true only if you can prove the father was not a muksak, and you can't do that because
the father's dead.
There's no baldin. It's an Eisner case. He's got it nailed.
I would say the following, I don't know if this makes sense, that maybe what the Gemara is trying to drive here, the point the Gemara is trying to drive at, is that there's such a thing as tfisa bekarkos. Normally,
there is a way of doing it.
Normally for a person, but you know what? No, what I just said is wrong. In the case of gzela, we're talking about metaltal. How do I know this? Because we're talking about food. And there, maybe the din is different. And that yoresh, in this case the child, you know, Yirmiya's brother-in-law, has rights to tfisa. In other words, the Yerusha on metaltalin engenders a tfisa on behalf of the yoresh, in this case the child. Masha Ein came in the case where the child is trying to seize karka. You cannot establish a muhzakis on karka just by grabbing onto it, seizing and controlling, you know, which means you throw at anybody else who wants to trespass. That itself is not a chazak in karka. Chazaka means you are a marakama. We know that yesterday was yours, the day before it was yours, etc., etc.
Yeah, but if you don't know that, I mean, that's in a dispute, and you got it be as Yerusha.
Right, but here in this case, he doesn't have any claim to Yerush. He's sending his avodim to seize the character. So that's what I'm suggesting, that in this case where he has no Yerusha, his tfisa is meaningless.
That's not a problem.
We view the tfisa as a vice exile.
Right, that's a problem.
I can't hold the cotton, you know, necessarily culpable for this because he's a cotton, but he is stealing. and that doesn't generate any sort of chazok.
Yeah,
but in a case where a child clearly inherited these metaltolin, he establishes his muchzokas on the metaltolin.
Even though you tell you that his inheritance is stolen property, yeah, you have to prove that, and you can't prove it because the goslin is no more.
That's what it seems to be. But the chiddush is that Yerusha itself gives him some sort of status as a muchzok.
Right.
All right. Omer of Ashi, Omer of Shabtai. Mekablim Edim Shalom Bifnei Baldin. According to this statement of Rav Ashi, undermining everything that we said until now, there is Kabbalah's Edim without the Baldin. And Toy Bey Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan couldn't imagine why he would say such a thing. Mekablim Edim Shalom Bifnei Baldin. You better clarify your statement. We don't accept Edus without a baldin, and that we derive from Sharmur. Is kibla minei Rabbi Yossi bar Chanina? So Rabbi Yossi accepted the argument and the objection of Rabbi Yochanan, and he asked the following question: Kigon shahaya hu chole, o edim chole. Oshahayu Edov Mevakshim Lelech Lemedina Acheres Lemedina Sayom Vishalchulo Velo Bo. So it sounds like what's going on here is that although Rav Yossi certainly accepted the rule of Rav Yochanan, but nevertheless he would try to explain how Rav Ashi would allow accepting witnesses even Shalom Bifnei Baldin. And the answer is that there are extenuating circumstances where we allow the acceptance of testimony even though the Baldin is absent. In other words, you've got to somehow make sense out of Rav Ashi. It's inconceivable that Rav Ashi would accept this Edus unless we come up with some sort of explanation for it, that it was an exceptional case, that you could accept to say the Shalom Bifnei Baldin. And the answer becomes a case where Shehu Chola. Okay, now what does that mean, Shehu Chola? Rashi doesn't say anything, does he? Shehu Chola.
This is by Cholim, but the Edim are Cholim.
Okay, no, but I'm asking about these three words, Kigon Shahayu Hu Chole. What does Rashi say about that? He doesn't say anything as far as I know.
No.
And the Ritva says that it's referring to the Toveah, that the Toveah is a Chole. Now, if the Toveah is a Chole, then he has a very pressing, urgent need to bring these Edom and testify in his behalf, because he wants his Yarshim to inherit, let's say, a massive piece, an expensive piece of real estate, and his Yarshim will not be able to be Tovea because they don't know anything about this piece of real estate. They don't know the details of this possession, of this claim for ownership. So in order to do so, let's accept the Eidim Shalom Bifnei Baldin. Now let's take the case where instead of the Tovea being a Chola, the Nitba is a Chola. If the Nitba is a Chola, can we accept Avis against him in his absence? And it would seem that the answer according to the Ritva is no. The Ritva is only allowing this in the case where the Tovea is a Chola. O Edov Cholim, if the Edom might be about to die, so then this is the last opportunity to accept their Edus. Rashi says, what does it mean? Misukanim lamus v'im lo achshav emasai. If we don't accept their Edus now, it's completely lost. Notice they can't put their Edus into some sort of a bank, you know. Yeah, they have to testify.
But the problem is that would make sense in a case where, if it were not for the fact that they were sick, they would have to wait and give the Edus to the Baldin. But we're talking about a case where there is no Baal Din. The ganav is, the gosling is dead. He's dead from beforehand.
That is correct. This is a whole new sugya. Maybe I wasn't clear.
The same thing.
This is a whole discussion here that is agav urcha. I mean, nisgal gulat dvarim. We've established that you can't testify against the katan. We have to wait till he becomes a god. Why? Because he's not a baal din. Now the Gemara is going off on if you call it a tangent, about this whole law of not being able to accept anus in front of baal din. And the Gemara wants to say that in a case where the anus is gone forever, meaning if we don't get it now, it's now or never. That's not the case of a cotton, obviously, but in such a case, we will allow Kabbalah's Eidus Shalom Lifnei Baal Din. And that's what Rav Yossi is telling us here, and he has a whole list of cases here where it's either now or never. For example, the Tovea is unfortunately very ill. It's either now or never. His Yerushim are not going to know that they have any claim here and they would adduce Eidim. They don't know where to start. The other case is that the Eidim are very sick, and if they don't testify now, it's lost forever. That's what they lahavdil el fadolos, but unfortunately they talk about the survivors of the Holocaust, that you have to get them now to testify.
Right.
And that's what Yad Vashem and other organizations try to collect their testimony, because once they go, we don't have it. Now he has a third case where the Eidim want to go overseas. Now again, it's feasible that maybe they would come back after the trip, but back in the day when you went overseas, Medina Sayyam, we don't know if we'll ever see you again. And not only that, Sholchu lo v'lo ba. Now I don't know if that qualifies just the last case of the three. I would think so, because in the first case of the three, we don't have to talk about the fact that the defendant refused to come. Right? We don't have to.
What do you mean? I mean that's another case.
This is the fourth case. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. So I thought that he was. I thought he was qualifying the last case that.
No, that's another.
Because
another instance.
Yeah. Oh. So what's this called in law? I forget, there's a name for it when you subpoena someone to court and he refuses to show up. Okay. In any event, so in this case of Sholchu lo v'lo ba, the nitba has waived his rights. He's forfeited his rights to say there's no eidus without me, because we invited you to court and you refused to show up.
Right.
So that's your problem. So it's not some sort of gzeiras hakosam. That's what we see from this. There's no absolute hardcore rule that we don't accept any testimony in the absence of the nitpa. That's not really true. Okay, let's see if we have time. Omar Rabbi Yehuda, Omar Shmuel, Mekablim Eidim Shalo. Bifnei Baal Din, Omar Mar Ukva Lididi Mefashle Mine De Shmuel Kagon De Paskule Bidine. They opened the case against him, Veshulchule Velo Asa, and they subpoenaed him to show up, and this Nitba did not show up. He refused to come. Avolo Piskule Bidina, if they didn't start the case, Motzi Onale, the Nitba has a right to say, Ano Lebesna Gudel Azlina. I don't want to show up in this basin because I want to take it to a higher court.
Right.
And the fact that, but if this court case has already started, that then it's too late. He's already, they have a feast on him and he can't. Ihachi says, ki paskule nami, matzi omale lebesna godol aslino maravina, ki gon de nokat, diska mi beidin hagodol. So it means that the Tovea has a letter from the Bezdin, a diska, and on this letter it instructs the local Bezdin on this case of how to take the case and deal with it. And therefore, in such a case, Ravina points out, the Nitba has no right to say, I want to go to a higher Bezdin, because the case already came to attention of the higher Bezdin.
Right.
And the Bezdin sent this letter in which they said, we will appoint and give tokef, I don't know how you say it in English, to give the rights or the to recognize the rights of this local bezdin to decide the case. Okay, Rabbi, I'm gonna stop here.